Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is Michael Steele with a quick take from the Michael Steele Podcast. Check it out. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Michael Steele Podcast. We're having a great conversation, very insightful, and I think an important conversation with the Reverend Dr. Starsky Wilson, President, CEO of the Children's Defense Fund, Board Chair of the National Committee for Responsive Philanthropy, and Vice Chair of the Forum for Theological Exploration. Reverend Dr. Wilson, we've touched on a lot of elements that sort of go into shaping and influencing policy around kids, and certainly the impact that that has had and is continuing to have on children. We are still within the grip of a global pandemic. We've see these battles being played out now at the state level as things start to open up with the vaccine, and the age to get the vaccine has come down now to 16, and there's now consideration to lower the age to 12. And of course, there's this debate around the impact on children. How have you assessed, how has the CDF assessed more directly the impact of COVID on our kids, beyond just the educational narrative that we started out talking about? Oh, kids got to go back to the classroom, and there's value to that, but we also know some of what was driving that as well. But more importantly, the psychological as well as emotional impact that this pandemic has had on children, and how we may see that manifest itself over the next 10, 12, 18 months.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you first how I assess it is I look at my four kids and think about their individual needs. So this has been a unique journey for us and our family. Because I've got a 16-year-old who wanted to continue to play basketball. And so while he was virtually schooling, he was still having in-person practice and having to get tested every week during the pandemic and during the season, with several scares, with access to other team, other players on other teams who caught COVID-19. So we remind people, of course, that our children are not immune from COVID-19, as we earlier tried to think. But we also recognize that they're not immune from the impacts, the psychological, the social, the mental health impacts. As mine are Black children, I also recall the CBC report from December of 2019 that suggested that coming into the pandemic and even before this, we were seeing spikes in suicide rates among Black teenagers. So we had a suicide crisis in the Black community before the pandemic that disrupted their social routine, took them away from their friends, and cloistered them around the computers that we were trying to keep them from, headed into.
Right.
Trying to decrease screen time, we increase screen time. And so we really do have to tend to the mental health impacts, the spikes that we're seeing in targeted communities, particularly Black and Brown communities, around suicide rate, death by suicide in the attempts. Because these are real indicators of what the increased concern about loss, social disconnection from not just friends, but also family, seeing themselves in the context of several generations by being able to be with grandmother, see grandmother, grandfather in ways that you've not been able to see them recently. So what we're asking people to do, consistent with the conversation we had before, is we're asking people to ask kids this question. Basic question you used to ask your children: where does it hurt? As we think about going back into schools, as we think about going back into the jobs in the fall, as we test some of these opportunities during the summer and the spring, as far as in-school contact and the like, We should ask kids how this has impacted them. And that's how we're measuring it. So this summer, we'll spend time in our Freedom Schools asking with our partners, children and their parents, how has this impacted you? We're looking at the best of the research that tells us that we should be concerned by social and emotional development. And we're trying to offer additional supports for that as kids go into school. So we're going to have to be more social. We're going to have to lean in, having more conversations with children and youth. And we're going to have to respond to what they tell us. There are things that we can know, we can look out for from the research. Are they connected? Are they talking with friends? Do they want to go to the dance that is available to them in a particular semester? Or have they just recoiled and gotten used to a lack of connection? These are critical questions. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, this is something much like the COVID-19, like the coronavirus, is something that we can't see. So the impact on children, we're going to have to monitor. We're going to have to ask them how they're feeling. I really appreciate this new research around languishing. Thinking, oh, my child's not depressed, but are they languishing? That doesn't mean they're thriving just because they're not depressed. And they may be seeing it. They need to be reminded to pay attention to what's happening with them. And we need to be not just looking for an impact on grades. Because I'll tell you, this is, I think about my 13-year-old. This has been my concern for him. My conversation for him has been, I think school is too easy for you in the pandemic. He gets his work done so fast. He's made all A's in the pandemic. He's made all A's before.
Right.
He worked harder. He's making all A's in the pandemic. I think we do have a challenge with, whether kids are getting the kind of robust education that they were getting before.
How robust that was before, but we, I don't know, certain public inner city schools, robust is a, an interesting term, but it's an important one. Nonetheless, I think in light of that aspect of what you've described, particularly in the languishing part of it and how all of this psychologically impacts children, then you layer on top of that for Black children, the whole reality around Breonna Taylor and George Floyd. And how do Black kids, particularly young Black men, and it sounds like you have two boys or four boys? Or you?
Three boys.
Three boys and a girl. So you're going to have three times over the 10 and 2 conversation with your sons.
Yes.
You've got a 16-year-old who's just starting to drive, probably, and going to hang out with his friends. Particularly as I used to tell my sons, when you hang out with your white friends and you get pulled, if you get pulled over, remember the cop sees you as the most dangerous person in that car.
Yeah.
So how has that conversation, or how does that reality also figure into the psychology of our kids in this pandemic space, given all the pressures that come from that and the societal cultural pressures that existed before, and now you've got this new reality. It's not a new reality, it's old reality, just played out in a new way in respect of policing and the criminal justice system. I mean, it just to be a 16-year-old Black boy today has got to be, want to curl up into a ball and stay home.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've seen it, every child is different. I've seen it happen to different ones, especially of my boys who are older. They're 16, 13, and 11 in different ways. And of course, my boys also grew up with me very actively engaged, in 2014 and 15 in the Ferguson uprising. Right. So they saw me.
So they were there. Right.
Yeah. So they didn't directly, I didn't take them out to protest and those things. But, they saw pictures of me arrested. They saw me and the Ferguson Commission meetings, working and convening. So they have a sense of this. But I'll also say, to the high level, my most clear statement about this is that these elements arrest the development of Black children and brown children. Meaning, I'm clear that I have not afforded the same freedoms to my children that I was afforded based upon my concern for their well-being, so that they have not had the same opportunities for life skill development that I had at their age, based upon a sense of security and safety that they do not have the privilege to access. That's one thing. The other is, and I think that's, and I think that redounds across the country. And I think that's for kids who are, you know, middle class with access like mine, to kids who are in communities of deeper need. I saw that, you know, I pastored for 10 years in a distressed neighborhood in North St. Louis, where I saw the same things that, you know, while kids had opportunities to engage back and forth on the streets, they were also restrained in their development based upon concerns about safety, right? So those are still my children. And in another way, I'll say it has also prepared them for the realities that they're going to have to contest to have voice. So my 16-year-old, when he was then 15, was with me at the polls last year when we were, you know, engaging in the illicit activity in the state of Georgia of feeding people at the polls and giving them water in line. And, you know, he was clear.
Right.
He needed to be a part of this mass mobilization there in St. Louis to make sure that people didn't get out of line, make sure people had that opportunity to vote. He has clarity about those issues. He, you know, he pushes back. He's the one who's talking about Ibram Kendi in my house, and what he's learning about how to be an anti-racist and advancing those ideas and challenging even the notions that we have inherited about race and racism. And so I think there's also this matter of intellectual kind of preparation and in some cases militarization that is coming from young people to, because they want democracy for them. They want what they have been sold and told is the American dream. And they see very clearly that that's not necessarily something that will redound to them without without some challenging contest. So I think there are ways from a social, emotional, and life skills standpoint it arrests development, but there are other ways in which it's causing young people to get intellectually and politically prepared.
Thanks for downloading this Michael Steele podcast quick take. Now, you can always find us on Apple Podcasts where, guess what? You can review us. You can give us 5 stars. Oh, yeah. I love the 5-star rating. Or you can catch us on iHeart, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts. See you soon.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to lostgolfballs.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands in stock, 50% off retail. lostgolfballs.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.